people, it is the Starship Brocon Show with Anna DeBlantis.
Yes.
Off for another day of broadcast insolence.
You seem to have a lot of energy after your procedure that you...
I slept for like 30 hours, so I should really have a lot of energy. It was bad to have... To the colonoscopy was a lot of fun. I'd like to thank everybody at Northwestern mm-hmm. for not telling the stories or taking pictures. I really appreciate that. God knows
sure
what I did
didn't?
Or said.
Not yet.
It's my Dr. Michael Cohen. I want to thank him for everything that he did. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The prep is as described. Mm-hmm. I haven't done it in a long time, so it was like fun to remember exactly what that's like.
Yeah.
Really kind of an interesting moment because I had an afternoon. Mm-hmm. It's much better if you do this thing first thing in the morning.
I think that's what I did. I did it first thing in the morning.
Yeah. You have to wait around all day, and you got to do that one more time. You have to kind of get through that moment.
Well, you're thinking about it the whole day, too.
Yeah. I slept. I don't know. I went into, because I know that I was going to be under and not have any recollection of it, so I was kind of cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was all right. It was
And you got an early report, like everything looks okay.
Yeah, everything's fine.
Good,
yes.
good.
Everything's fine. They were the doctor told me something, but I don't remember exactly what it was.
Can radio guy give the medical report?
It was like, wah, 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 wah. I'm like, okay, yeah, cool.
But then he maybe had a thumbs up or something you understood because you knew it was okay.
Oh, I'm sure there was a thumbs up because there was something going on there. But they gave me kind of a goodbye, like a release, like, you know, some notes in mm-hmm. a release thing,
mm-hmm.
which I read. And then I woke up this morning, I looked at him, I'm like, wait, what?
What do I have?
Yeah. They said everything is, you know, just basically fine.
Everything sounds scarier in those reports.
There was, there were a lot of, they tell you things, and the nurse is very sweet.
Good. That's, yeah.
I'm sure you were very nice to her, too.
But she was, I just got there, kept my head low, you know, I kept my sunglasses on during the whole thing, just in case. You know, it's really funny,
just
though.
In case what?
I got to tell you, this is the best. There okay. was, you get there, and then you go, you check in, and then they give you a code number. And the lady who was, you know, checking you in, taking the insurance and everything, and she goes, now, just so you know, now this is your 6-digit number. They will call you by this number so they don't identify you. It's part of the HIPAA law. I'm like, okay.
I haven't experienced that.
I had never either.
I just went for a mammogram, and they was a very busy newsroom, a waiting room at Northwestern, and everyone's name was called.
Yeah. So I thought, well, this is new. This is kind of fun. It's HIPAA. Mm-hmm. I didn't know. I didn't know that we had rules like that anymore. I thought now it's basically, you know, they're just going to let you die. And so, I'm sitting there in the waiting room, and a lady walks out, and all I hear is, Conroe! And I'm sorry, Rocon. Is there a Rocon in here?
Which one's the first and which one's the last?
Yeah, I don't know. Two people and one person.
What happened to the number?
And I'm looking at the number, and I'm like, that was a real waste of a number generator right there.
And you've been sitting there memorizing it. Gotta
yeah,
be ready for
exactly.
my number.
You're
like,
gonna
that's
call
061729 to you. I mean, what happened to the number system?
I don't know. I didn't want to say she was in a bad that particular nurse who took me back, because she was in a bad mood. She something bad had just
She's
happened.
Like the right White now. House lady yelling at everybody to
yeah.
get out.
Get out! Get out!
That is not good during that kind of procedure.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And everybody in this waiting room is getting their keister checked. I mean, there's there's only one reason to be in there.
You kind of give each other the look like, yep, getting your keister checked.
Yep, I mean, one guy got on his cell phone and started talking loud on his cell phone, though. Yeah, now tell Johnny I'll call him right back. I don't think you're calling Johnny right back. I'm going to be honest with you.
I'm going to be operating the high-powered tools. I'll be fine.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, anyway. All right. Stephen Moore is going to join us here in just a moment. Let's check in with Judy, find out what's coming up at the bottom of the hour news.
Lightning strikes country thunder.
Here is Violetta Pidermedic.
Hey, this August, Chicago's hosting the ultimate month-long food festival. Visit ctfoodbowl.com. Get your seat at the table.
And Stephen Moore is with us. And my guess is that Stephen knows what a BOGO is because he's an economist. Are you familiar with the idea of the BOGO?
I am.
Yeah, all right, okay.
Yeah.
There we go. That's what I thought.
They always tempt me. I see BOGO, and it makes me shop.
Seems to always work. All right, a lot to discuss with you, sir, the happy warrior, as I like to call Stephen Moore. The I saw you earlier today. I just want to get a little clarification on this. I saw you earlier today on the CNN talking about the president's public criticism of the Fed chairman and the policies of the Fed chairman here. They're worried about the rising of interest rates here. And you said that has happened before, but it's generally behind closed doors and not public. But obviously, we're in different times here. We'll all stipulate to that. Let me ask you, can this economy overheat, do you think?
No. I don't believe in overheating an economy. I mean, if the economy is doing well, it can continue to do, increasingly well. And if you get the policies right, if you get the taxes down and you get the spending down and you deregulate, you know, there's no reason the American economy can't grow at a, 4 to 4.5% pace. And we're going to need faster growth if we're going to do anything, about this this huge national debt.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because it does seem, obviously, you're already on the supply side, if you will, of the government's economy. You've cut down the income that they're taking in with the hope that they'll take in more income by stimulating the economy and that rising tide raises all ships. But so far, and it's going to take some time before we'll know the answer to that. So far, they are still spending like drunken sailors, to keep the nautical analogy. Are you concerned about that?
Sure. I mean, I'm sure I'm concerned about the overspending, and you're right. They are spending like drunken sailors, both the Republicans and the Democrats. And, we just passed this obese, indefensible spending bill earlier this year, and it was a bipartisan Treasury grab rate of the funds. And so spending is going to be up about 11% this year. And, the only way to bring this debt down is to get the revenues up. And look, we think that if you can get the economy going at 3 to 3.5% growth, which, this quarter, by the way, we don't know the official number yet, but it's being estimated at 4.5 to 5% growth, which is something we haven't seen in many, many years. That generates a lot of revenues when you get people working and businesses profitable and capital coming back to the United States. So, there's just a headline today, by the way, the biggest construction boom going on in America in 25 years. So these are really strong numbers. Manufacturing is good. Construction is good. Technology industry is doing really well. There's 6 million more jobs today than workers to fill them. So we've got an economy that's firing on all cylinders, and that will generate tax revenues. Whether that generates enough tax revenues to keep up with the spending, we will see.
The president's tweet this morning is what set the financial world aflutter. And I just want to ask you about it, because he said China, the European Union, and others have been manipulating their currencies and interest rates lower, while the U.S. is basically doing the opposite, taking away our big competitive edge. Do you believe that that's true? And then is he lobbying the Fed chair? And will that make a difference? Is this Fed chair going to take this into consideration?
That's a great question. First of all, I don't think the Fed is going to pay much. The Fed is independent, and, Trump actually appointed Powell, who's the current Fed chairman. But, the Fed acts independently, and, the president has to, if he wants to, he can jawbone the Fed. I don't know if that's going to change their opinion or their actions. Look, I think we got the best of all worlds when it comes to the Fed right now. We have very, very strong growth. We have very low unemployment, and we have low inflation. And, Donald Trump, I said this on CNN earlier today, but I'll say it on your show. I spent a lot of time with Donald Trump during the campaign, and Donald Trump is a guy who has made his money in real estate. So he's a real estate person. And what do real estate people love? Low interest rates.
Yeah.
I was going to say money.
No. I saw you say that, but then I also saw Kate Baldwin say back to you, but he's president of the United States.
He's not
a real estate guy anymore. I mean, there's an entire economy here,
right?
He takes a lot of credit for, and you and I've talked for years about this, and we've been through three presidents together, Stephen. So yeah. the reality is,
are we that old?
We're that old. So, or at least we've been doing this
long.
Four
or five. I'm just
so so the idea of a president taking full credit for an economy, we kind of know that's partially true. A president can certainly make an economy worse, and he can in the short term make it better. And he certainly superheated what was accelerated up what was already a growing economy. So that's good. This is all good.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, there does have to be some concern. I mean, especially the way in terms of currency and interest rates, you don't want to see, you don't want to see inflation. You made the point earlier today. You're not seeing massive inflation except in energy. There's some inflation in obviously in dairy and some other things that are tariff concerned at this point. Mm-hmm. Two things before we let you go. One, on tariffs, do you think that this is just a game that is being played, or are we really going to get involved in something here?
That's a tough question to answer. Look, I will say this. I think Trump cares a lot about the trade situation. I think he believes we're being played as fools. We have a $500 billion a year trade deficit year after year after year after year. China's cheating. They're stealing. They're not playing by the rules. They're not abiding by the rules they set up. And Trump, and by the way, we have the lowest tariffs of virtually any other country in the world. So, Trump wants a level playing field. If we've got a 4% tariff, he wants the other countries to have a 4% tariff, not a 10% tariff. And so I don't see Trump standing down here. The big battle right now is between the United States and China, and I think Donald Trump's opinion is, and I happen to agree with them, number one, you can't get tough enough with China because China is so misbehaving right now internationally, both economically and with respect to building up their military, and they steal $300 billion of our technologies every year, so this is a country that is a thief. But, I think this could go on for many months. Trump will not back down, and China's going to have to make some major concessions, or they're going to lose access to the most important asset in the world, which is the $15 trillion consumer market.
Well, that may well be true, but what does Canada have to do with that? I mean, that's...
Canada, it's a tough times between Canada and the United States because you have two presidents right now, a prime minister and a president who can't stand each other, Trudeau and Trump, and it would be pretty easy, I think, to get a deal with Canada. But I don't... by the way, this is amazing. We're more likely to get a deal with Mexico on trade before we get one with Canada. And, that's a shame because we want all of North America to be a free trade zone. It's worked well for all three countries. But, Canada, I think part of this is just the personalities that, Trudeau stabbed Trump in the back after the G7 meeting, and Trump is pissed off at him about that. And, sometimes personalities intervene. Remember Gorbachev and Reagan got a lot of this stuff done to end the Cold War because they liked each other.
Yeah.
Trudeau and Trump don't like each other.
I think a president should be above that, but that's a separate thing.
I agree with you.
All right.
Personalities should not decide.
I know. But you do a nice job of shaping it so that it seems palatable, but it's still scary as hell to me. Stephen, thank you so much.
One thing you just said, though, Trump deserves credit for this economy. And the economy, the day after the election, on November 7, 2016, consumer confidence, business confidence shot up. The stock market shot up the day after the election, and it's remained high ever since. There's a clear, in my opinion, there's a very clear Trump effect here. We replaced an anti-business president with a very pro-business president, and it shows in terms of the...
I think there's something in the middle there. I happen to think there's something in the middle, but I'm not getting my way right now. All right, Stephen, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right, Stephen. Have a great weekend, guys.
All right, thank you. You too. We got Judy Pilak's news coming your way in two. Concho with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Yes. Coming up in a few minutes, Mark McKinnon, host of Showtime's The Circus, executive producer of The Circus, is going to join us talking about what's happening today. But before that, with no further ado, here he is, Alan Dershowitz. You know him, you love him for many things, but the case against impeaching Donald Trump is his most, or impeaching Trump, I should say. He didn't put Donald in there because he got to get it all on one page. The case against impeaching Trump is now available where all fine books are being sold. All right, let's talk about this, Professor. The attorneys for Michael Cohen have confirmed, everyone has confirmed, even Rudy Giuliani, the attorney for the president, has confirmed that there is a tape of Donald Trump and Michael Cohen having a conversation about this Karen McDougal woman that they paid off, not to talk about her affair by way of, who was paid off by way of a contract with the National Enquirer people. And there was this conversation that happened before the election. Does this, if you were an attorney for Donald Trump, would that give you chills?
Well, first, I don't know what's on the tape. Well, we know it's 2 minutes. And the big question is, why do we know about this? Why are we listening to lawyer-client communications between a lawyer and his client? Why did the government seize it? How did it leak? If you can start listening to conversations between a lawyer and a client, people are going to start listening to conversations between you and your doctor, you and your psychiatrist, you and your rabbi, you and your priest, you and your wife. We have to really be a little bit concerned, if we care about civil liberties, as to how these private conversations have gotten into the public domain. To me, as a civil libertarian, that's the primary question. The secondary question is...
Hold on a second. Hold on. Yeah. Whoa. Sure. I get it. That's a very lovely flag-waving moment that you just had right there. But you know as well as I do that lawyers drop this stuff trying to get any kind of traction they can in a case and trying to put pressure on the other side. And it certainly seems reasonable.
Who are the lawyers? Are they prosecutors? If they're prosecutors, it's a crime.
First of all, the government may be in possession of them, but Michael Cohen knows that they exist, and all we know is that they exist. We haven't heard them, we haven't seen a transcript. It's not yes, the government could have done that, but I'm just asking you as a simple process question here, is this a problem legally for the President of the United States? Because Michael Cohen's attorney is going to drop this too, saying, hey, everybody behave here.
Well, again, we don't know what's on the tape. It's supposed to be 2 minutes long. But I want to go back to waving the civil liberties flag. You may demean waving the civil liberties flag or waving the American flag. But I don't care about Donald Trump. I don't care about Cohen. I care about the Constitution. I care about people's right of privacy. I care about people being able to have confidential conversations with their attorneys without their attorneys taping them, and then without the government seizing those tapes, and without it somehow leaking. And I think that, to me, is a bigger issue than the contents of the tape. Sorry if I'm waving the flag.
That's all right.
But I happen to believe in the flag and the Constitution.
I happen to as well. I'm just saying it doesn't necessarily come from the government, because I've seen this happen.
We don't know. We don't know.
Right, we don't know.
Professor Dershowitz, let me ask you, because so much was made for weeks and weeks and maybe months and months about Stormy Daniels. What I'm hearing now is that the Stormy Daniels case is not as legally threatening to the president, because that was paid through a shell company by Cohen, not reimbursed by Trump, at least not that we could tell. But the McDougal one was paid by a direct corporate donation, or as Roe pointed out, from the Inquirer's parent company, American Media. If it was paid to benefit a campaign, that could be illegal. It could be.
We need to know a lot more about it. We don't know whether it was paid back. We don't know whether it was a loan. We just shouldn't be jumping to conclusions that somehow there's a crime. I want to raise another question, and that is, why are we making heroes out of women who have consensual sexual relations with powerful, wealthy men, then get money for it, and then want more money and go to the media? Why is that somehow praiseworthy for a woman to do? If a man did the same thing, if a man had a relationship with a married woman and said, I'll expose it unless you give me money, we'd be all over that man, and appropriately so.
I don't think we're making heroes. I don't think they're heroes.
The fact that they may bring down Donald Trump. So all of our priorities get really, really skewed when it comes to Donald Trump.
Karen McDougal's a supporter of the president. She says that. She's come out and said many nice things about him and said she supports him.
So why does anybody even know about their affair? Why does anybody know? When people have affairs, usually it's an implicit assumption that nobody's going to talk about it. Why do we know about this?
I can't believe it. I know.
Politicians, we always find out about their affairs.
Should we go back 20 years? I mean, we've been through this before on the other side. This is politics, right? This is the honeypot. This, by the way, the Russians are particularly good at this.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good at setting you up with somebody. The dumbest thing in the world for Donald Trump to have done anything improper in a hotel room in Moscow. You know, I went to Moscow a lot in the 70s. I represented Soviet dissidents. And I was warned repeatedly by the State Department, by other people, do not do anything in a hotel room in the Soviet Union or in Russia that you don't want to see on the front page of the New York Times.
Yeah, that is really
good advice.
All right, Professor, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Alan Dershowitz.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The case against impeaching Donald Trump, or I guess the case against impeaching Trump. Let's bring in Mark McKinnon right now, the executive producer of The Circus on Showtime. Alan Dershowitz, very reliable now, defender of the Constitution, even though it may be being overseen by a president that makes us all a little bit uncomfortable. I will ask you, as a political operative in your previous life, do you think that this Michael Cohen tape is going to be a problem for the president?
Oh, I think anytime you have a personal lawyer who has recordings of the president, it's bound to be problematic. You know, There's a whole lot more to come from Michael Cohen, and the tape, I think, is just the tip of the iceberg, given the kind of dealings that the president had in his prior life, the kind of people he dealt with. I think it's going to be a field day for the Mueller investigation.
Now, do you think that, just your thoughts on what you've seen over the last week here, coming back from the Russia summit? You know, remember, it was Monday. It was Monday.
That was months ago. What are you talking about?
Yeah, come on, Ro. It really was.
That was March, right?
Right. So the president gets back and he invites Vladimir Putin to Washington without his DNI even knowing about it. We'll get to that in just a second. But first, what is your thought on his performance on Monday with Vladimir Putin? It does seem like a lot of Republicans. You are a Republican. You've worked for Republicans. You talk to a lot of Republicans. It seems like a lot of Republicans who like the idea of Donald Trump because he's a conservative with the courts and the economy and all that might be taking a walk here.
Well, first of all, I'm really glad we're not on the air this week. We have to. First of all, it would be 6 hours long,
and we'd
be redoing the whole show right now. I thought it was the low point of the presidency. I really did. It was such a witheringly bad performance, and he was so taken to the house by Vladimir Putin that, you know, it just, I don't see how anybody could look at that and defend that performance on any level. You know, it was, first of all, it was ill-planned. There was a meeting that we had no idea what took place. They came out, and he wilted on the stage by Vladimir Putin. And this is the guy supposed to be the master negotiator, and he looked like the puppet that he declined to be, or he denied to be, during the debate with Hillary Clinton. Not a puppet, not a puppet. He was a puppet. He was a total puppet on that stage. So, you know, it just keeps begging the question that so many people are asking about what in the hell is going on there, because it just doesn't add up. Right. And yeah, go ahead.
I just want to ask you about this Trump-Putin Summit 2, the one that was sort of hastily announced yesterday. Even Dan Coats, director of National Intelligence, said he was unaware of it until it was announced publicly. That's going to be happening in D.C. Do you look at this as a continuation of those talks, or do you look at this as a redo to try to get it right in the eyes of the American public?
Well, I mean, from what I gather, and you all tell me if I'm wrong here, but I thought that they had agreed to that summit at that meeting, to the second meeting, that was my understanding. And I just think it's part of Donald Trump's continued path to elevate an authoritarian power and put them on equal footing to the United States, which is really, at the end of the day, all Vladimir Putin wants or wanted. I mean, I had heard an interesting discussion the other day by a friend, by a Russian expert, who said he doesn't really even care about the sanctions. He just wants to be recognized in the world order on the same stage as the United States. And Donald Trump has done that now completely by the first meeting and now with the upcoming second meeting.
Yeah. Well, there are some defenders of the president who are saying this is a Nixon in China reversal. Nixon courted China to try to offset the rising imperial nature of the Soviets. And this is a way to try to offset the rising imperial nature of China and the Chinese government if you can bring the Soviets in and you can basically triangulate the circumstance. You agree with that?
I think that's a reach. I really do. And I've never heard Donald Trump articulate that. You know, that's a level of three-dimensional chess that I don't think Donald Trump plays. I think he likes to punch what's right in front of him.
I think you're okay. You're right about that. All right, I know you're biking up the Pacific Coast Highway, and we interrupted you in the middle of all of that. So we're going to let you go do that. When is the circus coming back?
Labor Day. We'll be up Labor Day through the midterms.
Very cool. We love the show.
Best show on television.
It is. I can't miss it.
Thank you, Mark. Kick it hard.
Hey, thank you. Kick it hard too. Thanks. See ya.
Bye, Mark. He's cycling the Pacific, the
Coast
PCH?
Yeah.
Oh, what a cool thing to do.
That's what he does. When he's not bicycling up a mountain.
He is the fittest guy ever.
And wearing a gigantic cowboy hat and then a scarf that clashes with his shirt.
He always has his hat on.
That's the thing. Does he have a helmet? I should have asked him that. Does he have a helmet that
fits over it?
Does he have a gigantic cowboy hat that fits over his helmet, I guess is the question. I don't know. He is one of the best.
He is.
One of the best. I do. That's one thing. I do like people who are honest in politics. And he's honest.
He seems to call him as he sees him.
Very few. All right. Let's check in now with Judy. What's coming up at the top of the hour?
A lawsuit over the Legionnaires outbreak in Illinois.
And we've got VLS traffic being brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
It's Hawks Convention Week next week. Brian Campbell joins the Steve Cochran Show Monday at 7:10.
Soupy.
To talk Hawks, Pucks, and his summer of golf with three children. Hawks Convention 1 week from today.
Oh, yeah, we'll be there.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, yeah. Soups. Mm. That's the only time they actually got creative in their nicknaming over there.
Where did that come from?
The Blackhawks. Well, because it's Campbell Soup.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I missed that. Soupy.
Soups.
Hey right. There.
See, Anna, you would have fallen into what the rest of the team did. Was like, why? Oh, I don't understand. Why are we calling them that?
That's not the way hockey names go. They're pretty straightforward.
That's Camps.
Cambers.
Right. Okay. Oh, yeah.
Sorry. I didn't get the Campbell Soup reference.
Exactly. So sorry.
All right.
Really, truly sorry.
All right. We've got Judy Pilak. She's standing by with the WGN News. And Tom Skilling is going to join us. And we're going to be discussing my colon with him. So don't anybody move. I think you're going to want to stay tuned for it. Judy's got news in two. With Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Tom Skilling joins us, being brought to you by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Tom!
Hello! Happy Friday, colonoscopy kid!
He survived.
I know.
He pulled through.
Yeah!
He made it.
Well, the doctor pulled it through, but you know what I mean.
He got it all taken care of.
I'm glad to hear that. You know something? They were taping Pat Tomasulo's show as I came in.
Yeah.
The group was leaving. And people came up to me and said, how's Ro doing after the colonoscopy?
They're very worried.
I said, well, we're going to find out.
We were all pulling for him.
Right? Yes.
And
yes.
It turned out
don't say
strong.
Pulling. Yeah.
You sound none the worse for wear. So
no.
This is good.
I was telling Anna, I slept basically. When I left here on Wednesday, I went home. You know, you can't eat. You have to take that stuff that makes you clear everything up.
Yeah.
So I did that. And then I didn't have event wasn't until 3 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Oh, wow.
So I had the whole morning where I had to
starve.
And I had to take more of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so I was just sort of napping and the whole thing. I was basically like a house cat for the last day and a half. And so I then went in and then they wanted to look up and down at the same time.
Uh-huh.
That's like double
the pleasure.
It's kind of like you're a skewer, you know, you're on a skewer.
Yes.
And so they knocked me out something good. And I can tell you this, I can report this, that I had a conversation with our producer yesterday, sometime in the 6 o'clock hour, and I did not realize I had that conversation until this morning when I was going through my phone, and I'm like, when did Jeff, why did I call Jeff?
I was stunned, because Jeff came in here and said, you know, Ro called. He said, everything's fine. I said, Ro called? He promised us. There's no way, no how, were you going to call in? You were going to avoid us, you weren't going to be on the air, you weren't going to call, and then you call. You can't be without us, Ro. That just means that when you're on the Truth Serum, you just really love us.
Yeah.
Want to be near us.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, Ro, do you get a printout afterwards? I've done that.
Yes, I got a printout.
Yeah. And they include pictures and everything else.
Oh, I got a picture.
Pictures.
Yes, I got it. So I had
the pictures.
Yeah, I had three. They showed me.
And I don't think we'll be seeing those anytime soon.
I don't think we want to put them up.
Yeah.
No.
Instead of headshots, you should get a bunch of prints of those and sign them for fans.
You should make it your background on Twitter.
I had
your polyps.
I had three polyps, which they said were very small. They're not very worried about. But they're sending them away anyway.
Good.
We'll find out what's going on there.
Sure, to be safe.
But they said that. That looked, that looked okay.
Yeah.
But I should actually, that should be my new broadcast team behind me. Just me and a picture of the polyps, or Rokon and the polyps.
Sounds like a musical club.
It does.
You know.
It's catchy.
Yeah. Somebody could be out at La Palooza, you know.
Yeah.
La Palooza, but whatever.
Rokon and the polyps.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I remember I had a couple of polyps, too, and they told me, you know, my father had never gotten his colon checked because they didn't stress that as much back
then. No, they didn't. My dad either.
And so we knew when he went in that, there was something that had been found. But the doctor said to me, you know, if your dad had gotten, a colonoscopy, we could have caught it at that stage, the polyp stage.
Even advanced stages, and, our friend Eddie Olchek, who
yes.
really, you know, I had I've been putting this off for 2 years, and when you know Eddie went through what he went through with colon cancer, to me it was like immediately it was like a wake up call. It's like I've been putting it off. I'll be fine. But I got to go do this.
Yes.
And he had not gotten checked, and he was about to get checked. He was he wasn't quite up for it yet, and he was having some symptoms. And then that's when he went in and he found out he had a very advanced case of it.
Wow.
And you know, doctors were able to not only save his life but save his lifestyle in a lot of ways. And it was just, it's amazing what they can do. That doesn't mean you should not check. You should, because it's a lot easier. He would tell you, you don't want to go through what he went through.
No, you know, anybody who's gone through that really will be the most vocal advocate for having, you know, these colonoscopies done. My father was after me, you know, did you get your appointment yet? And I'd fully intended to do it, so he didn't have a lot of convincing to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But still, he kept on me about that. And, you know, remember Katie Couric? You know, doing
right. Right. Very
and
famously.
Anna, you would be in the same
I
situation.
I did, too. My dad having, that was the cause of his death. And
wow.
like your father, he wasn't encouraged, really, to do it. And my dad wasn't that great at going to the doctor anyway.
Right.
And
right.
So he's one of those, you know, an Army veteran, and just sort of, just kind of didn't really, you know, go to the doctor that often. He was kind of this strong man.
Yeah.
He was just, nothing's wrong. And boom, it was too late for him. But, you know, they're saying that it's younger and younger people who are getting impacted by it. Colon rectal cancer is increasing by more than 50% among adults under the age of 50 since 1994. They've seen that kind
That's
of a spike. And so, you know, ask your doctor. But when it's time to get it, don't put it off.
You know, I remember I went to my brother's wedding and my uncle was there, my dad's brother. And I didn't really, I knew there was something wrong the minute, and it struck me at that affair. My uncle looked healthy, had ruddy complexion and all the rest, and I looked at my father and I hadn't realized how pale he had gotten. And of course, it was after that that they, you know, they diagnosed and said, you've got to get in here and we've got to go to work. So, but it's funny, it'll sneak up on people, you know, and when these procedures are available and we know about them now.
And it's totally, and here's the thing about it. I mean, this is the beauty. I have no idea what happened.
Right.
They, whatever they give you, you have, I mean, I'm making phone calls last night. I said this earlier. I actually FaceTimed somebody while I was eating.
Yeah.
While there
rice
were
checks?
Rice checks dribbling out of my mouth while I'm wearing my hospital gown. I don't recall any of that. But you know, it was a, I should, you know, I bring a lawyer with me everywhere. Yeah. I should have had my lawyer with me in the room.
Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why I didn't think to do that.
No.
Mike Monaco just standing there in an impeccably cut suit, standing behind me while this whole thing
perfect
was going
tan,
on.
Perfect tan, perfect hair.
Keep me from saying something or drooling or whatever it was I was going to do.
But you know, Ro, I'm going to surprise you by this. You know what? I've gone through it, and I decided to skip the sedative. And I'm telling you something, you feel a little pressure. There's no pain with it. It's you kind of feel like you've got gas, and then they are putting gas in you. But it's very tolerable, and it's not painful. And so,
not interested.
I know.
Wait,
you know,
now, why was that decision made? Why did you decide you wanted?
I wanted to watch it. You know, they said there's
scientists,
a monitor. We'll roll it up, and you know, you can watch what's going on. And I thought, hey, this sounds kind of neat. How often can you see that?
It's just another volcano that he wants to take a look at. Not for me, because they were doing both, and the endoscopy I would not have been able to handle.
You
that.
Gotta
you got
to do what's comfortable for you, and there's no reason to feel out of sorts about whatever decision you make.
Right, I mean, and it was fine. And the guy, and I even said to the guy, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna be out for all this, right? He goes, yeah. Because you know, given our schedules and what we do,
right?
It's I was really looking forward to not being available for a day somewhere, because you know, because we work weekends, we do all kinds of stuff, we're out doing you know, other things, and so it's like it's like being able to say to the people, I'm gonna be asleep and you can't, I may be calling you, but don't listen to a word I say.
Yeah, nobody can come to you and say, now look, while you're doing this, you know, why don't you, talk about the Big Bang Theory and write a paper on it or something like that.
Exactly.
You know?
It's too much. So I enjoyed that, but I also wanted just to be out anyway, because let's be honest, I'm a wuss. I don't need this. This is like the last thing I need is to deal with this.
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I was a kid, when they used to drill, you know, for cavities, And I was always good about brushing my teeth, but I never used Novocaine, and that was awful. And I remember what they used to tell you at that time was the pinprick you get as they introduce the Novocaine is sometimes more disturbing than the pain afterwards than the drilling. Nonsense. I mean, I would never do that again without Novocaine. Some help.
Yeah. Some people can't have it because they react to it.
Yeah.
And I have to, there's a certain kind of Novocaine they have to give me because of a reaction to it. Uh-huh. It's like short acting. Mm-hmm. And I have, because, you know, I had all that dental stuff in the fall. I'm just a mess. I'm just a medical miracle that I'm sitting here.
I'm just looking for reasons to be sedated.
But I'll tell you, Brody's got a heck of a porch. Yeah. You know, and I'm telling you something, you can go and recover on your
I got
porch.
A great deck. I got this amazing
that's
deck.
That's right, your deck.
I think I might have been out there last night. I have no idea.
Right. Well, no. Maybe your neighbors. Ask them.
I should
check in on you.
Yeah, because they'll tell me.
What do you think about this thing in Missouri?
Let's talk about that, because that is... Okay, so there's a few things that I think need to be understood here. First of all, the boat that these people were on is the National Transportation Authorities are concerned about those kinds of boats, those float boats with a with a big roof on them.
Yes.
Because when they get into open waters, and this is it's not a big lake, but it's a sizable body of water.
Well, it was 80 feet deep, somebody was telling me.
Yeah, so it's going to have wave action.
Yeah.
And you get enough wind, that becomes a sail.
Sure.
And it starts to move the boat and tip the boat in ways. You know, you think a float boat is just, you know, very stable, it's on all fours, it's going to sit there. And in this case, because of that roof, it couldn't. And the authority has been warning about commercial use of vehicles like that, of vessels like that.
Yeah, if you go back and look at the safety record, it's not impeccable, that's for sure. They say now 9 members from the same family were among the 17 people who died. 2 from that family survived.
How horrible. You know, can you imagine that? You go out on a boat and you don't expect to die. You know what's amazing is apparently one of the people from this company said, oh, it came out of nowhere. Do you know that they had a severe thunderstorm watch out for that area 8 hours ahead of time? There was a warning out for that storm 30 minutes ahead of time. And the day before, there was talk on local media down there at the risk of severe weather the following day. You would think that, that would be reason enough to be at least very cautious. And on top of that, there have been all kinds of tornadoes dancing across Iowa up to the north of them during the day, and this stuff was headed southeastward. So it was clear. I gather the line that ultimately went through that area had come together about 7.5 hours ahead of time and just made its way southward into Missouri. So there was plenty of warning that there were some ominous weather conditions coming up, too. So, somebody dropped the ball on that.
No question about it. And obviously, you're going to have lawyers and others, involved in this. And there's going to be a look into it. But it is one of those mass casualty events in America that seems so preventable.
Yes.
And it seems that from the face of it, it seems as though the people who are making the decision, you rely when you get on something, when you get on a piece of transportation.
Right. You don't have expertise on how it runs.
You assume they know what they're doing.
Right.
Right. It's an assumption that you make. And I know, and sometimes you do it, and then about halfway through, you realize they really don't know what they're doing.
Oops. Yeah.
Right. I mean, especially if you're overseas, that is real. That's always a moment where you're like, oh, this must be okay. I mean, who possibly? And then you're like, oh, my God, remember those Thai kids that got caught in the cave? Right. And they're going off a mountain road. But in the United States, because of our laws, because of our regulations, because of our court system, you figure we are going to have the least likely scenario to find yourself in a stupid situation.
Yeah.
And that, at least by my looking at it, I'm not an expert, but my looking at it, that seems like a really dumb thing
that happened to
cause that kind of grief and tragedy.
Wow.
Surprising, too, because the captain, also among the dead, had 16 years of experience with this particular boat company.
The captain lived. It was the driver of the boat that died.
Wow.
The captain of that boat?
The driver is dead. The captain.
What's the difference between the driver and the captain?
The captain.
Were they both on board? Right?
Yeah, they were both on board. There was the captain, and then there's the guy at the wheel.
Called him the driver, yeah, the captain, yeah. Bob.
Because the captain, that's going to be an interesting conversation that they've already started. He is cooperating with authorities. That's part of the story today,
right?
That he's trying to, and he would be the one making the decision.
Yeah, you think so? They say they just go. It's kind of a short tour. It's like less than 30 minutes. They go in and around this little island and back, and that they had other boats in the water. And I don't know. He's sort of downplaying what they're saying that it was surprising to them how severe things turned.
The video is stunning.
And you hear in the video there's a bunch of videos, but in at least one video you hear this woman going, "What are they doing out there?"
Yeah.
Right, yeah. The people on the shore watching.
I don't think I've seen a body of water tossed like that. They estimated the winds were 65 to 75. And by the way, in the text of the severe thunderstorm watch, they'd indicated there could be gusts to 75 miles per hour. So, you know, this is pretty well handled. It's tragic.
It is.
No other way to describe it.
Let's get people ready for the weekend. What's it look like for tomorrow?
You know what? We've got this slow-moving system here. So what it'll do is spin these little clusters of showers. And occasionally there might be a thunderstorm embedded within it. Last night, there were some really healthy storms that went into north central and northwest Illinois. Up to 3.25 inches came down out of the storms. And the lightning displays were spectacular. They didn't get into the city, but it gives you an idea what this air mass can do, this system. So a lot of clouds. It'll be very humid. That keeps nighttime temperatures up, daytime temperatures down. And finally, there could be some breaks for a little mixed sun Sunday afternoon. The heating, though, and all the humidity in the air might actually allow an isolated shower or thunderstorm to pop even then. So we're thinking in terms of a half an inch to an inch and a half additional rainfall as an average across the area. Some spots may get a little more than that. Summer rainfall is never even. But it gives you an idea to have some rain gear ready. You know?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, Tom, brought to you by PermaSeal Basement Systems. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
Appreciate it.
Welcome back, Ro.
Thank you, Tom.
And happy Friday, Anna,
to you,
too. Have a great weekend,
Tom,
guys.
I'm going on assignment next week. I'll be on the air for this assignment, but it's something I know that you would dig,
ooh,
too. So we'll be talking about that next
Looking
week.
Looking forward to that. Yeah. Wow, okay.
Very interesting.
You've piqued our curiosity.
Just for it, just for a day, but it'll be interesting. You'll be able to hear the screaming from here. All right, thank you, Tom.
See you, guys.
Bye,
all right, so let's check in now. Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Got ticket.
Violetta?
This week, the Chicago's best team is bringing you some of their favorite summer foods. You mean ice cream, burgers, and more. Chicago's best this Sunday night at 10 on WGN-TV.
All right. Coming up, I got Hawks convention passes. This is my last family four-pack to avoid. No, I got more.
Even more. It's next Friday, and we'll be out there, the whole crew.
There. I don't want to stop saying family four-pack. Please be sure there's always a family four-pack.
Probably find a family four-pack of something for you. There's always more where that came from.
We'll do our best. Creepy DJ guy. Cheesy DJ guy. I don't know. I get all of these puppets confused. I have no idea who's who anymore. I just wonder how much I was doing that yesterday under sedation.
I know. We were wondering that, too, on the air. I wonder if all these little characters come out when you're under sedation and you just become one of them.
And then we thought, yeah, what happens if he gets stuck as, like, you know, Johnny Depp or creepy DJ guy?
That would be
You go in as Ro and you come back, you know, 10 different people.
Yeah. I'm telling you right now, I can feel that thing wiggling all up inside me. It feels warm. It feels like love. It feels like air supply. 79 at O'Hare.
I'm lying alone with my head on the phone, thinking of you till it hurts. I know
all right.
You
too. All right, cut it out.
Nice job hitting the post.
Thank you.
Never miss.
I mean, thank you.
Stay close.
Stay close is right. All right. The point I was trying to make is I got these passes to the Hawks convention starting next Friday, and we'll be out there. All right. We got Judy's News coming your way in two. From Contra with Anna DeMontis on 720 WGN Chicago. No big deal. You know one of the things I love most about WGN?
What's that?
Is how much incredible access we have to our sporting world and our news world all at the same time, right?
I'd agree.
That's what I thought. All right, now, Adam Hogue, who was Mr. White Sox, is now Mr. Bears for the remainder of the Bears season. And as Captain Bear, we have sent you to Bear Benet, as they like to say down there. I don't know why they like to say it, but they say it anyway. It doesn't make a ton of sense for me. And the pitchers and catchers have reported, as we like to, is that right? Do I have that right? No?
What happened? So.
Close enough.
Yeah. All right. And everybody is there, but Rokan has refused to show up.
Yeah. He's, I don't know if he's protesting his name and how similar it is to yours or what, but he's not down here. And I don't know how long this is going to take. His agents are the same ones that dealt with Joey Bosa a couple years ago, and he held out for basically the entire preseason. I don't think that's going to happen, but it's definitely a little disappointing not to have your first-round draft pick here at training camp.
And they think as this kid is so fast, sideline to sideline, he's really kind of built for a Vic Fangio 3-4 defense. But he's got to learn the speed, and he's got to learn the complexity of NFL offenses here, right? I mean, get your keister in there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and yeah, we're talking about a guy who I think the Bears hope is their latest Brian Urlacher. And I'm talking about that more so, not that he's going to end up being a Hall of Famer, although hopefully he will be, but the quarterback of the defense, the guy that's running the whole thing,
right.
your coach on the field, per se. And so that's the guy that needs to know everything and needs as much practice time as possible. So that's for me, that's the thing I worry about the most. Not necessarily that his career is going to be stalled at all by this whole thing. It's just that, I think he's talented enough to be starting week one at Lambeau Field, but for him to be able to do that, he has to have the whole defense down and ready to go.
In his defense, Adam, I mean, part of this is the agency group, right? I mean, are they just being stubborn, trying to make a point that, yes, look, we're fighting for our client here? What do you make of this? I don't know if we're necessarily calling it a holdout just yet, but what do you make of that when it comes to the agency and the different aspect for the player and the agency group?
Well, first of all, I would definitely call this a holdout. The Bears are just walking off the practice field right now. The first practice is over, and he missed it. So, to me, that is a holdout. I think, you have teams that have their set parameters. They're not arguing about the money here. The money's already set. It's slotted for your draft pick. But the structure of the contract is what both sides are arguing here, how much money you get up front in your signing bonus. So, different agencies have different rules that they like to follow for their clients, and different teams have different rules for how they want to allocate their money and their salary cap. And that's I think, where the impasse is right here between the two sides.
Yeah. How long does this get straightened out? I mean, until it becomes a crisis? I mean, is it the end of the week, or are we talking it could be longer?
Yeah, I would say if we get to the first off day, which is Wednesday, and he's still not here, and at that point he would have missed four or five practices, that's not good. And certainly if we're getting the preseason games, and the first preseason game is 2 weeks from yesterday, so it's creeping up on us pretty fast here. If he starts to miss preseason games, then that's maybe when I'll start using the word crisis.
Right. How did Mitch look? Are you even allowed to report to us? I know the Bears basically have clamped down on all media reports from Bourbonnais, but what did you see from practice today? I know it's day one, but obviously a lot of excitement around this team this year.
They literally hand us a piece of paper that says, report what you hear, not what you see. And it's like, well, then why are we even watching these practices then?
Haven't they relegated you guys to like 500 yards away from the fields in a little tent huddled together?
And then at some point, they actually have Coach Nagy. They have him point to the press and go, they're the enemy back there. You see them?
Yeah.
Those guys. Look, they're turning the lights up. That's the thing that kind of gets me. I get it that there are certain secrets to all of this. Then maybe don't have the press for the first couple of days. Don't invite people down there to treat them like a chattel. Right. They are an entertainment. It's a great entertainment. I love it. I love football. I love the Chicago Bears. I will always love the Chicago Bears, but at the end of the day, they're inviting journalists to watch them so that they will tell their story and they treat them like they're the hired help, and they're not. I don't like that.
Yeah, and it's the fact that it is entertainment is why they get away with it. I mean, if this kind of stuff, and I know the White House has tried some of this stuff, but you know, if they tried any of this in Washington, it would not fly. It'd be a huge controversy. This is just sports, so it doesn't ultimately matter all that much. But you know, that's the new rule this year, and it's coming from our understanding is it's coming from Coach Nagy that he does not want reporters on the sidelines. And this, you know, the last 16 years here in Bourbonnais, reporters have been allowed to stand on the sidelines during practice, and now they're moving us up onto a hill in a designated media area, which Bill Belichick does in New England. We were out there a couple of years ago, and he did that. So
all right, well,
it always goes back to Belichick.
That's a good sign.
Let me just tell you something. You know what the difference between Belichick and Nagy is?
What?
Super Bowl wins. See, yeah. The difference here is it's fine. You can be a tough guy all you want, but if you come out 2-6, the gloves are going to come off. What he doesn't understand, and I think with the organization is probably because they got their new guy, they want to give him what he wants. They don't understand that this is one of the toughest sports media markets,
absolutely,
on the planet Earth.
And you build goodwill, right? But I mean, is it that he thinks that the reporters are a distraction, or he really doesn't want you to see things, or things that are they want to keep to themselves?
You know, it's a great question. We were actually, some of us were just talking here during practice about whether or not we should just straight up ask Nagy that at his press conference today, and he hasn't talked yet, so I think we are, and so hopefully we'll actually get, you know, something that we can, you guys actually have the answer here maybe an hour or so on your show, because it is a little weird. No one has violated the media sideline access. You know, it's not like a player has gotten hurt running into a reporter or anything like that, so I think it's a great question. Hopefully we get an answer.
Hey Adam, on the positive note, nobody on the physically unable to perform list going at the start of camp, which I feel like that's the first time in I don't know how long the Bears haven't entered camp with at least a couple guys injured. Can you remember the last time they entered camp without anybody on the PUP list? Because that's encouraging to see.
Certainly it's the first time the last 4 years. However, Danny Trevathan wasn't practicing today. Cedric McManus wasn't practicing today. And Josh Bellamy wasn't practicing today. So, again, Matt Nagy hasn't talked to us yet here. He's supposed to here momentarily. So hopefully we'll get some answers on that. But so if you count Roquan Smith and Danny Trevathan as the starting inside linebackers, neither of them were out here on the practice field for the first practice.
All right. I'm not going to worry yet. I'm not going to panic. All right. No, I am panicked. I have already panicked. I've already begun my panicking.
And that's the list.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
See you, Adam.
Get back to work. Yeah.
All right. Bye, guys.
Get back to the hill.
Yeah.
Get
back on your hill. And I was like, I'm not seeing my family because of this, and I got to stand on this hill.
Way over there? I can't see anything.
They're like under a tent, all packed like a herd of sheep.
You know what? Be careful here, Chicago Bears. You have not exactly acquitted yourself as the monsters of the Midway for, basically the better part of this century, right? Save the 2005-2006 season.
Mm-hmm.
Or 2006-2007 season, I guess it was. You do not put yourself in a situation where you are encouraging the tellers of your story to turn on you.
Yeah.
That's a dangerous place to be.
So you already have some season ticket holders a little concerned.
I think Coach Fox probably likes this tactic.
Yeah, because it makes me look better.
Right. I bet you he wish he implemented this in his training camp regulations the past few years.
I don't know. Which ones are the press and which ones are the players? That seems to me. Listen, if Nagy is a winner, all will be forgiven.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
If Nagy is not a winner, he is not. He's setting himself up here for some trouble. And it's not. Listen, the reality is that we are invited to give them free advertising. So when people go, well, you people in the press, you're just, you know, you're perfume princes, and what are you doing? And, you know, who cares about your egos? It's not about their egos. It's about the fact that they're being invited to tell the story. If they don't want the story told, that's fine. They don't have to have the story told. They can just go, we're not going to have press. But then to invite people and then want them to tell a positive story that will sell season tickets and then treat them like crap while you're doing it isn't going to help anybody. It will not help them in the long run.
Amen.
Yeah. Just, you know, just some 24-year-old back there going, yeah, that's why we're going to do it. No, I don't think so. All right. Well, we'll see. I'm just hoping they put some stuff. You know, we could just not cover it at all. Have everybody just go home, and then we'll see you at the Hall of Fame game, and then we'll see you in Lambeau because the other pregame seasons, preseason games.
Mm-hmm.
I close my eyes on every snap, hoping nobody gets hurt.
Right. That's all you're hoping for.
Mitch Trubisky should get 4 plays in the preseason. Get him out of there.
4.
Get the White House lady to get him off the field.
I'll tell you, it should only be taking a knee. 4 like that. Thank you, Coach.
Thanks, Coach Fox.
All right. Let's find out now from Judy what's coming up at the top of the hour.
2 Gurnee police officers cleared in a fatal shooting.
Violetta?
The Steve Cochran Show has free Blackhawks convention passes for you Monday at 7:20.
All right, I'll stay close. I got some Rick James on the box right now. 79 over here.
Groovy.
Right. Yep. All right, we got Judy Pilak's news coming your way in 2. The Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. We got ourselves Mr. Richard Roper stepping in the studio. Mr. Roper, thank you. Thanks to you and Anna for hanging out here yesterday while I was drooling into a cup.
Yes, we kept up with that, and I'd like to thank Anna. We decided that we put together 2 hours and 20 minutes of excellent radio spread out over a 4-hour period.
Sure.
But still, we were pretty proud of what we did with what we had.
Super awkward last half hour of the show. Nah, if fine. You're going to go pull it, you just don't. That's the part you're going to want to not listen to. Newsaroos wasn't the smoothest yesterday.
Well, that's good, because if I were listening, I wouldn't remember it anyway.
That's fantastic.
Because there were, in the aftermath of my colonoscopy,
yes.
I was able to remember nothing. Mm-hmm. Including making a series of phone calls.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah.
And
gotta worry about that.
Yeah, and and apparently also one FaceTime.
Oh,
one
my gosh.
One unfortunate FaceTime, yeah. Mm. With rice checks dripping out of my mouth while I was in.
All I heard from you was the tree surgeon is kicking in, and I think you meant the anesthesia. I said, okay, I'm going to let him go. The tree surgeon? Who's the tree surgeon?
I said some things.
Hey!
Wow. Got the good stuff, didn't you?
Oh, I did. Well, I asked for it. I was like, all right, listen, pal. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you do. I don't want to know or remember anything that happened here today.
Rose's hospital room is like when you pull up to a gas station, there's 3 pumps. You can go for the 83, 90, or the 93 premium.
Yeah.
You took the premium.
I went for the fancy gas.
Lift nozzle, press pump.
Yeah, I did. I'm like, hey, listen. I honest to God, I said it to him. I'm like, listen, I do not want to know. I just it's really best. I'm in the performing arts, and we generally like to be drugged before we do anything. So that would be good. Thank you, sir.
Well, it all went well. Yeah, we're happy to hear that.
Well. Yeah. So it's good.
Got
and
good
you feel
results.
Great, and you want it. You should do this, and you feel great, and it's easy, and it's just it is. It's the easiest thing in the world. You just got to take a day off to do it. That's
there
it.
You go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that day is kind of fun when that stuff kicks in. I'm going to say that right now.
Oh, boy.
All right, here we go.
It's as far as you know.
The top 5 on the Rokan Show. 5. Let's go.
3, 2, 1. Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Okay.
Number 5.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and South Korea's foreign minister today briefed the United Nations Security Council on the current status of the North Korean denuclearization efforts. Pompeo, after today's meeting, said ship-to-ship transfers of oil occurred at least 89 times in the first 5 months in this year and continue as... And U.S. Ambassador and U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley say that China and Russia blocked a U.S. request at the U.N. for the suspension of those kinds of transfers.
Hmm.
What are you doing?
Right.
What are you doing? This is what we're, you know, we're trying to put some pressure on you here.
Mm-hmm.
So the two countries claim that they need more information on the issue.
So the U.S. put yesterday a halt to all additional
refined petroleum shipments to North Korea. China and Russia blocked it. Now, for China and Russia to block it, what are they telling us? Are they telling us that they want to continue supplying this oil? They claim they need more information. We don't need any more information. The Sanctions Committee has what it needs. We all know what's going forward.
Let me tell you what we are doing. I tell Donald Trump what we are doing into our meeting. Don't worry about it. Young Missy, Nikki, what is your name is? Not interested. See that all these people calling Vladimir Putin now the most powerful man on the planet.
Yeah.
How does that ride with Donald Trump? I think that's why they're saying it, to try to get a rise.
Of course.
Yeah. Did you see the Time magazine cover of the two faces fused together?
It looks like Derek Jeter.
It does look like Derek Jeter.
Look closely. It looks like Derek Jeter.
That's what it is.
I'm going to look at that again.
What? Right, it does.
It really does.
It is nothing like Derek
Jeter. Oh, what? It's like his twin.
A little bit like Madeline Albright, maybe, but not Derek Jeter.
Who knew?
It's very frightening.
I looked a little like Madeline Albright after the event yesterday.
With a little cap on and everything. Yeah.
Oh, well, did you get the gown or did you get some shorts?
Oh no, you get a gown. Oh, they don't want shorts. That's a curtain on a stage,
access.
Baby. Yeah, that's what's happening. All right, so Mike Pompeo, he's the Secretary of the State of the hour, and he was asked, "Hey, what about this meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin that's upcoming?"
Yeah, I'm happy that the two leaders of two very important countries are continuing to meet. And if that meeting takes place in Washington, I think it's all to the good. Those conversations are incredibly important. We have our senior leaders meeting all across the world with people that we have deep disagreements with. It is incredibly valuable to the people of the United States of America that President Putin and President Trump continue to engage in dialogue to resolve the difficult issues that our countries face between each other. I think this makes enormous sense, and I'm very hopeful that meeting will take place this fall.
Okay. Just hope the dialogue doesn't include sending Americans over there for interrogation again.
How would we know if it's good for America or not? Who knows what happened in that meeting? Anybody know what happens in that meeting? Did you see this? The theory today that the Finns, not the family, but the people in Finland, the Finnish government may have actually recorded that.
Oh,
there might be a third party recording.
Boy, how tempting would it be for anybody?
How about that?
Yeah, that would be something. I suppose. I mean, I like what the Secretary of State's not going to find himself in the way that Dan Coats has found himself. He's going to sit there and act like this is all serious and important.
I knew about that. I definitely knew about that. I'm telling you, I'm saying a lot of words about how good it is because I knew. I didn't find out from the news.
Okay. I just remember when Viktor Petrov came to the United States in the White House in House of Cards. That was the last Russian president. That didn't go well.
No.
Right. Didn't he try to make out with the wife in the stairwell?
He did, indeed. Yeah. Cop a feel from the First Lady.
Yeah, okay, like you don't see that happening.
Wow.
All right, now this, and this is what Dan Coats is in. Dan Coats, apparently, the Director of National Intelligence, the fine and esteemed senator, long-standing senator from the state of Indiana, one of the great statesmen in the history of this country in the last 50 years. He is the Director of National Intelligence. He is the guy who's supposed to know everything that is going on. Everything that is going on.
You would think.
And this happened at the Aspen Security Conference yesterday.
We have some breaking news. The White House has announced on Twitter that Vladimir Putin is coming to the White House in the fall.
Say that again?
Vladimir Putin coming
to the... Did I hear you?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
That's going to be special.
Okay.
Wow.
Now,
unbelievable.
I heard people criticize him today. Should have gone, oh, of course, I know that, and then get back and then raise hell, but you can't raise hell. I applaud Dan Coats, who is I've known him for a very long time, so let me put that out there first. I've known him and we were friends for a long, long time. I've always respected him. We're not always on the same side of things, but he is one of those guys. He's a very dedicated public servant. And the people of Indiana know that. And to leave him in the dark about this, or to make this announcement while without telling him, is not good management on behalf of the White House. They should really not do it like that.
No.
This is the guy who you don't want to leave out there naked. You know he's out at the security conference that the world's security experts are at. There are Russians at this conference. There's all kinds of people from all over the world that go to this Aspen Security Conference. It's a big, big, big deal. And this is, it's appropriate for him to be there, and he was trying to represent the White House's position on things. And then to leave him out there naked like that is just...
Didn't look right.
It's really awful. It's really not the right thing to do. All right, checking in at...
Number four.
FBI is in possession of a recording between Donald Trump and Michael Cohen. Discussing the payment to Karen McDougal, this woman that that is alleged to have had an affair with Donald Trump, a long-standing affair with Donald Trump.
She says it. Yeah, that's right. He hasn't.
He doesn't acknowledge it. Although he likes the fact that people like this one. They don't like the Stormy Daniels one, but Donald Trump fans are like, oh, look at him. Like, guys, I've heard more than one middle to older aged Republican guy going, whoa, Donald Trump can get one like that. Wow, look at that. Honest to God, that's true.
He met her at the same place he met Stormy Daniels, in that Lake Tahoe golf outing.
Yeah.
Both of them in one time.
He was in a run that night. Anyway, the point is, that she got paid off by American Media, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is the people that own the, that's that Pecker guy.
It's the parent company for the National Enquirer.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
Friendly with the Trumps.
Right. So, and there's a conversation now, apparently, that Michael Cohen recorded, that Donald Trump did not know was being recorded, about that payoff. How's this going to work out? Now, this is Karen McDougal talking about the affair.
Do you think Donald Trump would have been aware of this deal?
One of the big complaints with why I think my contract is illegal is because his attorney was talking to my attorney, so...
Michael, you're saying Donald Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen...
Correct.
...was talking
Speaking with Keith Davidson, your attorney. Without me even knowing, without my knowledge, I would assume that maybe he knew. I know his attorney did. I can't say that he knew.
So this is the beginning of the fact that, Michael Cohen was trying to get these attorneys just to cut deals without telling their clients about it, and then have the client go back and say, here's what it's going to be.
But how about the fixer recording the phone conversations?
The quote today is that Donald Trump was shocked to hear this. Well, how could Michael Cohen do this to me? You called him a dog. You made him get down on all fours and bark like a dog. Just like in that Bugsy movie. That's how it can happen.
Well, and it doesn't look good because Michael Cohen's attorney, Lenny Davis, is pushing back against Giuliani, trying to say there's nothing here. It's 2 minutes. It actually is exculpatory. It defends my client. Mm-hmm. It's nothing to worry about. Lenny Davis, the attorney for Michael Cohen, is coming out to say any attempt to spin this story cannot change what is on that tape in response to Giuliani.
Oh, God.
I wonder what Billy Bush thinks about all this. Hey, everybody, remember me? I lost everything. Because I didn't speak up when I had a chance on tape.
Including his wife now.
Yeah, she left me.
Left him. Yeah.
All right.
Oh, man. All right. So we'll get back to everything that we got to get back to here. But first, let's find out from Mrs. Pilak what's happening on the bottom of the hour news.
Well, among the 17 killed in that capsized duck boat in Branson, 9 were from the same family.
Oh, it's awful. Violetta.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights, WGN TV News at 9.
All right, top five continues. We have worked our way to...
Number three.
Yesterday's episode of The View, Whoopi Goldberg and Judge Jeanine, Piero, got into it.
Oh, say goodbye. Let me go. I'm gone.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Now, Piero told TMZ that she was mistreated by the show's hosts and was treated like she was less than human. Whoopi cleared the air about what actually happened.
I want to be very clear about what happened. So there's a lot of spin that she's doing, and I can't do anything about that, but I can tell you what went on. She was upset when she got here because Ana Navarro was here instead of Joy. And after the segment, which ended when it was supposed to, it was not early, it was not late, it ended when it was supposed to, she then called everybody at the table a name I cannot repeat on TV and said it in front of the audience.
Oh, you got to play that tape, even if you have to bleep it out. If that's true, if she said that, you got right. I mean, if she called them some horrible name, and the audience heard it, because We hadn't heard that before.
No, but then they took it backstage, and apparently right. Whoopi told her to get the you-know-what
yeah,
out.
Yeah, but now we're, if we're hearing it's because Judge Jeanine called them some right. vile name,
there should
that's
be tape
very
that.
Different. Boy, everything's got to be recorded.
Well, and this is, you know, I love.
I wonder if Billy Bush was in the audience.
I love Judge Jeanine. She is really, I mean, she's tough, but she has always been big-hearted and yeah, self-effacing. It's like this era, this moment, has made everybody just, this is like a blood sport now concerning politics in America. And people are standing up here, and I'm going to tell you, like 3 years from now, people are going to look back on how they felt about this moment, and they're going to be embarrassed by it.
I think so,
one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people on Fox and on MSNBC, CNN, whatever. If you go back and look at how they were on the air 7 years ago, 8 years ago, and now.
Completely different.
Very
person.
Different. Absolutely. Very different.
And the people that had more of a objective stance have totally switched.
This balloon has got to pop at some point.
Yeesh.
I don't want to think about what comes out. All right, here we go.
Number two.
Speaking of, Roseanne.
Hey.
Has offered a new unhinged explanation as to why she put out that tweet about Valerie Jarrett, the former Obama advisor.
Mm-hmm.
She says she was not being intentionally racist. She posted this clip to her YouTube channel as part of a larger interview. And I'm going to tell you, I don't think it helps.
Imagine in his statement to keep and save his job, there were jump cuts, multiple outfits, different sets.
I'm trying to talk about Iran. I'm trying to talk about Valerie Jarrett wrote the Iran deal.
I know, but you've told me this 300 times. Do you know that if...
That's what my tweet was about.
I know. You've explained this literally 300 times.
I thought the... was white! Damn it! I thought the was white!
Okay.
She's trying that to wasn't Billy Bush interviewing him. Somebody else. We don't know.
She's trying to prove she's not unhinged.
No, that was,
right.
Was
and she's
Ambien?
Not a racist.
Was
and
it
she's
Ambien?
Not a racist.
Again?
Yeah.
Oh,
no, she thought that Valerie Jarrett, who she referred to by the B word there, was white.
Mm-hmm. That helps.
You know what? Well, okay. Well, now we're fine. Give her a show back on ABC.
We'd only have known.
Put her back in the cast. But you know what? If she could just lay low for a while, I think this probably puts the final nail in the coffin. Mm-hmm. After they announced that they were going to do the show without her, if she had stayed quiet for 6 months, she'd be back by February. Mm. She'd be in the February sweeps
you might be right.
episodes. I can tell you that right now, but no one can get to her because she's nuts. She is just friggin' nuts.
Number one.
All right. Try to follow me on this one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Police in Memphis say that a man stole a car from a woman he was out on a date with.
Oh.
So he could be on a date with another woman.
Oh, gosh.
Then he just out of the blue texts me and asked me to go out. I don't know who dropped him off. He just got dropped off.
Oh, boy. There's a lot going on there. There's that very ominous music and a child crying.
Yes. I don't know if there's the baby's involved in this or not.
Oh,
I don't know where the baby really falls into this. But anyway. Now, this woman reported her car stolen after the guy went to her house without a car to take her on the date. And once they got on the road, the guy couldn't decide where to go. So they stopped at a gas station where he had this unusual request.
He asked me, could I go in the gas station for him to get a cigar? He just drove off. I came outside and my car was gone.
Oh, what? That's how he pulled off this.
Yeah.
This, yeah.
Go, could you go in and get me a cigar?
Give me a nice Swisher Sweet if you've got singles in there. I'll just take one.
Then took off with her car.
That's a dating site, Fender, where you try to meet someone and steal their car.
Later,
not as well known as Tinder.
Later that evening, this woman's cousin contacted her and told her that this guy had taken her on a date.
Oh,
I said, okay, well, send me the address to where you at, and I'm on my way. And he let her drive. So she drove him to the drive-in. He didn't even have any money. She actually paid their way to get in the drive-in just so I could get my car back. I hope he's in jail for a long time. I never want to speak to him ever again.
This sounds like a combination
mm-hmm.
of Maury Povich and Grand Theft Auto. If you made a video game and a talk show come together, that's what just happened there. Because you got the music playing, you got a car being stolen, you got a baby screaming in the background.
There's a lot of drama.
You got a guy leaving another person to go on a date with somebody else.
With her car.
Yeah.
You get two dates, a cigar, and a car in one night, man.
And a baby.
I went to Steel Harmony, and guess what I found?
That's a Friday night.
The top five at five.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! Drink, man, I'm gonna get gas. Gonna get high, man, I ain't had enough. Need me a triple shot of that stuff. Gonna get drunk, won't you listen right here. I want one bourbon, one shot, one.
Tastes great, makes women appear more attractive, and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life, and I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it, I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
You know that
that's what my tweet was about.
I know, you've explained this literally.
I thought the was white. Damn it! I thought the was white!
You know, I am just, I don't know how Roseanne Barr has not stayed married. I really don't.
How dare you?
She is so charming. You know, when I hear that, all I want to do is drink. Because I've been through that, and I'm like, okay.
Perfect. It's Friday, and look at the time.
Hey, don't forget me, Billy Bush. I want to come back if you guys will have me.
Oh, man.
Trying to start a bring back Billy movement here.
Let me tell you, Billy's doing okay. He put a vodka out.
Mm. Oh.
His own vodka, which I would start doing that too. And it has done very, very well.
He might know his vodka, but that's great. I mean, you know, you look at what the success of George Clooney selling his Casamigos for $1 billion.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because he's George Clooney.
He still won't get up that. And Miles mad at him for being getting on that scooter, though. Yeah. I think she's taking the scooter away.
Carnival Wagon is out. Speaking of alcohol, being brought to you by It's Just Lunch. And City Barbecue is here.
Yay.
And you might know and you might love City Barbecue from Berwyn, Deerfield, Orland Park, and opening in Downers Grove in August. And they're looking for people to go work there. Isn't that right, Chef?
Yes, absolutely. We are about to open up Deerfield in August. So we are definitely hiring right now, getting everyone trained so we can give that amazing food that you guys are about to eat.
I finished off a whole plate of this stuff. I was like, it's amazing. And then you cook everything on site. Everything's done there, but you do this low and slow cooking that you're known for.
Correct. Yeah. Everything we do is made from scratch. All the sides that you guys ate, we make in the joint every single day, fresh to order. And all of our barbecue, we smoke low and slow. You're correct on that. All of our briskets smoked for like 16 hours. Ribs, the chicken that you ate, it's all smoked in-house. And we source it as well.
That's cool. You can tell the difference, can't you?
And I called you chef, but you're really a pit master. Is there a difference between a chef and a pit master?
Well, I mean, a chef writes recipes for like restaurants, you know, like your normal restaurant that you go. A pit master is someone who's mastered the art of barbecue, which is, you know, America's food. Let's be honest here.
And it is so hard to master. Of all the culinary arts, I think it really eludes people because it's really a very tight algorithm between heat, time, type of heat, right? And then the aromatics that you're using, and then you throw on top of that the type of meat that you're trying to bone in, bone out. I mean, it's crazy stuff you got to figure out.
Yeah, and then also we're cooking with wood, which, you know, has its own set of variables anyway, depending on the wood you use, can flavor the meat that you are smoking, you know, make it sweeter, make it not, give it kind of a different taste.
Do you use different woods? Do you to create different tastes?
Yeah, at City Barbecue, we use hickory, because it's the most mild, it's the most balanced, so that way, like, because we have multiple locations, so that way everything's pretty much, no matter where, if you go to Downers Grove, or Berwyn, or Orland Park, or Deerfield, like you can get the same product everywhere. So we use hickory for that reason.
That's a good idea because, you know, sometimes, you know, that happens. We talk about various like pizza franchises, for example, and one location might not taste the same.
You got to get it from the old oven.
Yeah, so now you don't, so you don't have somebody standing up in Orland Park saying, this is nothing like Berwyn!
Right,
you
exactly.
You get the uniformity, that's good.
But you also, but the grills have to season too, right? The,
yeah.
What you're grilling
the smoker,
on.
Yeah.
Yeah, the smoker has to season as it's going around. And I just, it's really amazing how this particular art form, the three things that I grew up being forced onto me by my family, which was smoked foods, bourbon and beer, they're all in very much in fashion now.
That is a rough life to be forced upon.
Yeah, yeah. Really. Yeah. What a tough
Well, he was
childhood.
9 at the time.
Yeah, 6 actually. But I mean, but
start
these,
early.
But these were the, you know, that was the, that that's, you know, men were men.
Right.
And things were happening. We had to, you know, you had to grill something out on a beach somewhere because that's the only way you could survive. That's, and then maybe there was a bottle of bourbon, and then maybe you could, and then you could find a Hams beer, you were happy. And now, and you know, you're like, there was sand and grit in your barbecue, but you liked it, and now here we are, and we're charging $1 billion for it. I mean, it's a very, very cool moment. All right, so talk about what you brought in here.
So we brought in today our mother load, which is probably it is every single meat that we offer at City Barbecue plus 6 sides. So the mother load has our half chicken, our ribs, pulled pork, beef briskets, our turkey, and our sausage.
Wow.
So that
and you do that as like you doing family style there?
Yeah, it's family style. Yeah. It's really good for like party for like a family of 4 to 6. You can definitely feed them, and they're going to be happy. It also comes with 3 pieces of Texas toast and 3 pieces of cornbread. So that way everyone kind of gets a little bit of that, plus 6 sides. So
your sides are amazing. You have that cucumber vinegar thing that was so good. And then what's, is it like a stuffing with the corn in it?
It's corn pudding. So
corn pudding. The best I just had that. That's fantastic.
The way I always describe corn pudding is like if cornbread and cream corn kind of had a baby. Oh, you would have corn
pudding. It's a beautiful baby. Oh. It really is.
I was just thinking about how they got the baby, and I don't
know. Oh, my goodness.
Right now, it's too much for
There's
me.
There's a tape of that, too.
Yeah. Mike, where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from Colorado, but I spent 9 years in the South. That's kind of where I developed my love of barbecue.
Where's the best barbecue, of course, other than City Barbecue, now opening its 4th location in Chicago in Oh, actually, you're going to have, what are you going to have? 5, actually. Vernon Hills in October, too.
Rapidly expanding.
Correct.
So you have Berwyn, Deerfield, Orland Park, Downers Grove in August, and then Vernon Hills in October. Congratulations to them.
Thank you.
All right. So in the world, where did you find, is there one moment that you found, you know, one pit master, one dish somewhere?
Probably when I was living in Birmingham, Alabama at the time, probably like 9 years ago. There was this little place, and it's not really little anymore because it's fairly well known, but when I first discovered it, it was really little, in Homewood, Alabama, called Saw's Barbecue. And someone just brought it to me as like, because I was working at another restaurant at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those like,
what'd they bring to you?
It was a beef brisket sandwich. They brought me a pork sandwich because I'm a big guy, so I like to eat a lot of food. And I was just working it, like, just ate it in, like, in a break setting, like, super quick. But when I took that first bite, I was like, oh, my gosh.
This is phenomenal.
This is, like, life-changing to me.
Did you try to reverse engineer it at that point, or are you trying to figure out what they did?
No, I just went there, like, as much as possible. That's all I did. I was like, take my money here. This food's amazing. Just take all my money.
Because every artist has somebody that would, you know, somebody that they never heard of that inspired them, right? There was somebody up, you know, coming up the way. And I think chefs and people who do what you do the exact same way. You had one dish somewhere in your, you know, in your category that just changed your life.
Right. And that's, you know, and ever since then, like, everywhere I go, doesn't matter what city we're in, I'm just like on my phone, like, where can I find barbecue? Because I just want to try it because barbecue is such a regional thing, even from city to city, that if I'm in St. Louis, if I'm in Denver, if I'm in, you know, Augusta, Georgia, like, I'm going to try to find barbecue out just to see what it's like.
Cool.
What do you notice about the taste in Chicago then versus sort of the South?
It just kind of depends on where you're at in Chicago. If you're on the south side of Chicago, I found, like, rib tips are king. You know, you get that rib tip, that hot link. It's, like, smothered in mild sauce with fries, and it gets all together. But if you're, like, north, you know, it's all about brisket. It's all about beef, because let's be honest, Chicago's a beef town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
So
falling off the bone,
right?
Yeah,
so
yeah, but the Southside pork barbecue for specifically, there is this. I also remember from my childhood, there was a place, a rib place that and Link's place, my dad used to go to, and the South Side would take me, and I just remember the smell of it. It's mm-hmm. like the first time, like barbecue has this Absolutely. Almost, it like goes through your spine.
Yeah. Like when you're a block away yeah. and you smell it in your car.
Yeah. And you're like, oh my God, there's something going on here, and it's different, and it makes you hungry for the rest of your life, mm-hmm. I think, right. essentially, right? And I just will, to this day, it was on South Michigan Avenue, and I, to this day, it's gone now. You'd never be able to find it. But mm-hmm. but it was that one place you would go stand in line. I remember there was a big 7-Up sign, right? Mm-hmm. And then there was bars on the window. They were passing the food through underneath bars and bulletproof plastic.
Right. They spin it on the
glass, right?
Yeah, sure.
And it's one of those experiences that culinarily you think it's everybody's little secret. And now the world, because of the commerce that we live in now, everybody wants to have that little secret. And what you guys are doing is bringing that, especially barbecue, because as you said, it's such a unique thing. And St. Louis, they claim all these things.
They do.
Now that you brought them up. Mm-hmm. Like, just
thanks for bringing
second,
them up. I had right. to, yeah. Nice job. Yeah.
I mean, I know they got their own style and everything in the fall. I like mm-hmm. a little grit to what I'm, biting into. And there I just, go. I'm sticking by Chicago, at least in terms of the pork, the beef, you want Absolutely. It to be soft and luxurious.
You're doing something right because you're expanding and you've won all kinds of awards for brisket and some of the other barbecue as well.
Yeah, so in their late 90s, we won the American Barbecue Royal Championship for our beef brisket. And if you know anything about barbecue, that is like
huge.
The Super Bowl of winning.
And you're beating Texas in that because that's all they're talking about, right?
And and City Barbecue is an Ohio-based company, so like
huge.
Our founder, he led the team to that won that,
yeah.
And he's an Ohio boy, or he's actually from Kansas, but.
They know something about it in Kansas,
right?
Too.
But
they
like do. Midwesterners beating Texas at their own game,
yeah.
That's
screw
big.
Texas,
right?
That's
that Midwestern pride, right?
Yeah. Gosh,
what do they say? It's best in the Midwest.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. I don't care if you think you're your own country. go be your own country. All right. It's now. Why did it get political? City Barbecue is now hiring for Downers Grove, and they are already in Berwyn. They're in Deerfield. They're in Orland Park. They're in going to be in Downers Grove coming up next month, and then in Vernon Hills in the fall. It's citybbq.com, by the way, if you want to, for all things CityBBQ, whatever the, you're on the Insta, Instagram. You're on the tweets, you're on the whatever it is. The face chatter, and on Tinder, it is also City BBQ. If you're
oh my goodness,
I'm assuming
good match with brisket lovers all around the city.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it, Michael Gang, Pitmaster, City Barbecue, and thanks for everything that you
Thank
brought.
Thank you,
right here.
And the chocolate cake is phenomenal.
Yeah, we make that in house too.
To
we
die
also
for.
Make our own banana pudding every single day.
Look at you.
Nice.
We do it a little bit different because we make a cookie crumble that goes with it. So nice. It's not like you're. It's like an elevated version of your grandmother's banana pudding. It's phenomenal. I honestly eat banana pudding and gobbler every single day, along with our ribs. Our ribs are killer. One thing I am going to talk about, just because it's near and dear to my heart, is Rib Bone Tuesday. We do ribs by the bone, and you can come in and get as many as you'd want.
Oh.
And discount them. It's like our Tuesday promotion.
Ribs we get, by the bone.
Yeah.
Interesting. Never thought about that.
We get people who come in and get like 24 bones, 36 bones, and they just go to town.
It's his weather on Tinder.
Right.
All right. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. All right. Let's check in right now. Judy, what's coming up at the top of the hour?
A Chicago man exonerated of murder has a hard time cashing a check.
Violetta? Live Music Fridays from the first time in the WGN Studio B Live Music Center.
Boy, they sound good.
That's Where's Jameson. You might have seen them on Windy City Live.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be playing for us live. They're going to be at the Outpost in Lockport on Friday.
Nice. Yeah.
There you go. Because I'm going to let that just go. Oh, yeah. There you go. The band. This is exactly what happened at Abbey Road. It's the exact same deal.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So we're going to hear live from them. If you do want to see them, like I said, Friday, next Friday, a week from today, at the Outpost in Lockport. All right. Let us now talk to Mr. Richard Roper.
Yes,
I know you were here yesterday. You did the reviews. You were here during my colonoscopy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Parts of yesterday we don't want to recall, actually, but that's all right.
It's nice.
Very smooth show.
Because there are parts of yesterday I can't recall,
Good.
No matter how much
we're all on the same page then.
All right.
Yeah, it works out very nicely. But because I didn't hear it, and I wouldn't remember it if I did,
good.
Because I was on all the drugs they give you, the happy drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Just can you run down what you should and should not see?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got the Equalizer 2. That's with the Denzel Washington. It's the sequel to Equalizer. That's why they call it Equalizer 2.
Right.
And I gave that one 3 stars. That's an R-rated action movie where Denzel Washington plays the obligatory former Army hero, former CIA black ops guy, now trying to live a quiet life in Boston as a Lyft driver, which is a fantastic premise. And then, of course, you know, the wrong people get into the backseat of the car and all kinds of things happen. And then Denzel does a thing where he sets his watch to 30 seconds and assesses the situation. And then all the bros that try to take him on, they all say things like, "You picked the wrong door to knock on, Pops." And you're like, "Oh, no, you didn't. You didn't do that with Denzel." But we got to let people know, too, this is an R-rated movie. It's hard R. Antoine Fuqua, University of Illinois guy, by the way, directed this, and he directed Denzel to an Oscar in Training Day.
Yeah, oh yeah.
So you got to remember, this is the kind, and he did the first Equalizer as well. So,
but Denzel wasn't in the first Equalizer, was he?
Yeah, he was the Equalizer. He was the Equalizer.
Oh, I'm thinking of the TV series.
Yeah, it is based on the TV series. Essentially, it's a guy that just on his own makes things right.
The TV series had like an old guy in
it. A British dude. Yeah. But the whole premise is basically he's out there, you know, as a one-man kind of vigilante, a superhero who doesn't have superhero powers, but basically does, because he's Denzel Washington.
Right.
So we like that. And then Blind Spotting, which is a very unique, different kind of take on race relations with David Diggs, who won the Tony for playing Jefferson in the Hamilton musical, and Raphael Cassell playing two best friends, one black, one white, in the Oakland area. And they actually are two friends who wrote the screenplay and do the movie together. And it's a brilliant look.
So it's like Good Will Hunting, except for
it's taking on Do the Right Thing type material.
Okay.
And I would say it's a brilliant film, and you got to check that out. I give that 4 stars.
And it's called?
It's called Blind Spotting. Check out a film called
Blind Spotting. Which I thought it had a relationship to Train Spotting.
It's not a great title.
It has nothing to do with it.
When you see the movie, you'll explain what they actually explain it in the movie. But you got to check it out. It's one of those movies that you're really just, you're shaken, but also inspired by the content. And I know the movie Rose is looking most forward to is probably Mamma Mia 2.
Absolutely.
Oh,
Cher, Meryl Streep.
Oh, God.
Pierce Brosnan. So dreamy, but he can't sing.
Here's the thing. We talked about this yesterday. It's amazing because these Mamma Mia movies are absolutely bat bleep crazy. First of all, they're set on an island in Greece, just off the main coast, and there are no Greek people in the story, which is amazing. They kick all the Greeks out of the story
which
so that they can have all the Americans and the British and the Swedes and the Australians and everybody else. And then they cast actors who cannot sing. In the first movie, you had Colin Firth, Stellan Skarsgård, and Pierce Brosnan.
Mm-hmm.
They added Andy Garcia to the mix this time. And they actually gave him the name Fernando just so they could sing to him. Fernando.
Yeah.
But the best to me is still my favorite is Pierce Brosnan, who is wonderful. We love Pierce Brosnan, right?
I do. I'm a big fan.
But he can't sing, and yet he has a singing role. I think here's the song that I've been singing in my head for the last week.
Where are those happy days? They seem so hard
Wait,
to
let
find.
It go.
I tried to reach for you, but you have closed your mind.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Whatever happened to our love?
Oh, God.
I wish I understood.
Oh, my.
It used to be so nice. It used to be so good.
Okay.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That's it.
It's so great.
S-O-S.
Yeah.
It's
amazing. It's the last call at karaoke for the company picnic, and you go, "Oh God, the boss has got the mic," and that's him. And they said he went to vocal boot camp to get better from the first movie, which is amazing. I love that so
much. What's your name, fat buddy?
Sing it. The other madness, and look, it's harmless fun. But in the first Mamma Mia, Meryl Streep was about to see her daughter get married, and she didn't know who the father of her daughter was, right? And she was like this hippie. And in the first Mamma Mia, they talk about how Meryl Streep's mother was a very strict Catholic who disowned her daughter because her daughter was promiscuous and a free-living hippie and is now dead. The mom's dead. Now, we go 10 years forward. All of a sudden, Meryl Streep's character, by the way, spoiler alert, happens in the first 5 minutes. She's dead. They don't say why, but she's just dead. But all of a sudden, her mother is now alive again and is a touring musician played by Cher. Now, in the first movie, they said mom was a strict Catholic who disapproved of her daughter and disowned her and then died.
In this movie, the daughter's dead, but grandma's alive. Now, Cher's 72, Meryl Streep's 69, so that's a problem as well. But all of a sudden, grandma shows up on the Greek island just so she could look at Andy Garcia and sing Fernando to him. And she can't move her face anymore.
I still love the music. I think these are like infectiously fun exactly and a great escape from the world.
This is the unhappiest weekend.
Oh my gosh.
In a marriage since the last movie came out.
That's right, because you want to drag
Equalizer,
the guy
Mamma Mia 2. To the Equalizer, movie. Mamma Mia 2. I wish the Equalizer had shown up on the island in Mamma Mia 2.
Taking everybody out.
You picked the wrong Lyft driver.
Where are those happy days? They seem so hard to find.
Oh my
I tried to reach for you, but you...
That was after the boot camp.
Yeah, it's so great. They always try to figure out a reason to like crowbar in an ABBA song when the plot kind of calls for
it.
That
makes it fun, I think.
Can you explain? It makes guys' teeth hurt, right? I mean, the guys are all sitting like, oh, God. Oh, God.
I love the ABBA.
They got that, the Lily James, who was in the Downton Abbey. She plays the young Meryl Streep in the flashback sequences.
Mm-hmm.
It's there's a lot of flashbacks back and forth. And then you see
but three actors. How do they get all those other guys to be younger in the flashback?
They have three actors who sort of look like them, play them.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
They don't do the thing where they put tape on their eyes and make
No. But then at the end, they do one of those, you know, in Bollywood, all those Indian films, they always have the whole cast.
They did it in the first one.
In this one, the young Colin Firth and Colin Firth dance together, and the young Pierce Brosnan, and it's just, and none of them can sing.
Well, they're hoping that they get a huge international box office
and they will.
These things, too, because ABBA still, no matter what, for some reason, that people really love that music.
They're loved in Europe and everywhere. And you'd think it's like an answer, too, to some of these like action, I don't know, like
it's
big blockbusters
fluffy,
that you get in the summer.
And it's very literal. Like when they do a dance number to Waterloo, it's in a French restaurant with a maitre d' dressed as Napoleon. Right. I mean, they don't try to make it clever. It's just like, that's Waterloo. Waterloo.
Well, I guess when you think about the musicals of the 1940s and 50s, I mean, they would do that too. Out of nowhere, they'd have to break into song about
something. Sure, but they would people who could sing, or they would get somebody who could sing to dub the voice, like Marnie Nixon would sing for Julie Andrews or Natalie Wood.
Pierce Brosnan might have been a good idea for him.
Yes, you know, there are individuals who have played on Broadway who can sing, and they're like, and they keep coming. I mean, Andy Garcia. They're like, what can we do? Who can we add? Let's see. Okay, Liam Neeson's not available. How about Andy Garcia? So Andy Garcia, and God love him, but his two movies this year were The Book Club and now this. He was once considered like the Pacino of his generation, and now he just looks sad about these roles. But we have Pierce Brosnan. That's a good one.
Well, you know what that tells you is his accountant called him.
Andy?
And said, you got to get back to work. Could really help. Remember that? Remember Bernie Madoff? All right. You do have something, though, that you like. You want to talk about
I want to talk real quick about Eighth Grade.
All right.
Okay.
Stand by.
Let's talk about that. Another new movie coming
out. I prefer not to talk about Eighth Grade, but that's for different reasons. Let's now find out from Judy what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
A small plane slams into a building in Wisconsin.
Ooh, Violetta. Jameson, they're live in Studio B. Live Music Friday. We've been dreaming about this for years, and now we finally have it.
It's beautiful.
And they are going to be bringing us their dulcet tunes, as you just heard right there.
That's awesome.
And they're going to be at the Outpost in Lockport next Friday, by the way, if you want to see them.
Three guys with three of the greatest names on the planet. You've got Jameson Edwards, Jim Jesuit, and Robert Richmond III. They're all in a band.
I know. They're a trio. They are a trio right now.
Perfect.
I actually told them to take their headphones off so they didn't hear Pierce Brosnan singing, because that could get them all off kilter and off key.
They never make them the same way.
Tune their instruments.
So bad.
Can't do that.
So you want to talk about eighth grade?
Yes.
And I was going through a growth spurt. Okay. I mean,
it was awkward for all of us.
Well, and that's one of the things I love about this film is that there are when you think about movies about teenagers, they're almost always about 17 and 18 year olds, right? John Hughes movies, you know, kids who are at the end of their high school experience. This is about the last week in the life of an eighth grade girl.
who is smart and lovely and wonderful and absolutely lost and socially awkward and dealing with acne and trying to find her way in the world. And it just captures all of that in a perfect way. It's very funny. At times it's very heartbreaking and very moving, and it just reminds you, whether you're boy, girl, however you identify, you remember. Nobody, when you ask somebody, what's the favorite time of your life? Oh, when I was 7, that was the best. Or when I was 16, I got my life. Nobody says, when I was in junior high.
No, that's
and my
true.
Voice dropped and the pimples came and had weird reactions to things. And everybody looked at me and, you know, made fun of me. And this captured, the amazing thing is Bo Burnham, who's a 27-year-old comic, is the writer and director of this, and how he got this this life so well just speaks to his talents as a filmmaker. So 3.5 stars for Eighth Grade. You got to check it out. It's just, you know, you
where
just
do we find it?
It's in theaters. It's actually getting a wide release because it gets such good buzz from the film festival circuit. So it's actually getting a pretty good release.
And
it is
who's the young girl who plays
Her name is Elsie Fisher. She's fantastic. And it's like, you know, because she does these little YouTube videos every morning where she gives advice to everybody, and she seems like she's got it together in her YouTube videos. And they usually get 2 or 3 views. And then you realize she's nothing really like that girl that's got it together on YouTube, because when she goes to school, she in the awards ceremony in 8th grade, she gets quietest girl. Yeah, and the quietest girl, she's like, please, not me, not me, not me. And you get all of that stuff. She gets invited to the popular girl's party because the popular girl's mom makes her invite her. Yeah. And you feel for her when she goes back in the backyard and doesn't want to get in the swimsuit and jump in the pool with the popular kids. She goes on an awkward date. All these things that, you know, you can just relate to. But there's also some, you know, some really good moments of triumph for her. You just want to wrap your arms around this girl and just tell her it's going to be okay. And that's what her father tries to do. Her father's raising her as a single parent. Mom flew the coop. But as you know, you can't live your life for your kids. You have to see them go through all that. As much as you want to say it's going to be all right, they just go, oh, shut up, Dad. Or, oh, shut up, Mom.
They got to do it. They got to get through it themselves. Well, it's interesting, too, because often you see teenagers in movies as very two-dimensional.
Yeah.
And there are exceptions.
And she's the age, too.
Like
she's the same age, the character she's playing. The kids look like kids.
Yeah.
And she's got a crush on, like, you know, the cute boy, who, of course, is the dimmest bulb in the entire, you know, shed. And you see that, but she doesn't see it. All she sees is his dreamy eyes, you know. Sweet. And the guy can't put together 2 sentences. And you know, in 2 years, he wouldn't even be in her league. But right now,
it's that moment.
He's her world, you know.
All right.
It's terrific.
Eighth grade.
See that. Yeah, all right. Grade. Thank you very much, Richard Roper. Sure. Live Music Fridays on tap. Where's Jameson? He's right next door. We're going to find out how great this band is. You're going to find out. I already know. You're going to find out how great this band is and tell you where you can see them. It's all coming your way. But first, Judy's News in 2.
We have no fear as the morning comes, because we think we know. But we are young and we're moving on from all we know.
Uh-oh, look out for it here. Calm and everything is so good and everything's going well. It's nice and you're like, oh, this is so sweet.
Lovely.
It's like a love song. And then all hell breaks loose.
You just know it.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for it.
Not yet. All right, it's the wrong verse. All right, we have got, where's Jameson in the studio with us? You're going to hear some screaming coming out of this. And it stars Jameson Edwards, who is the brainchild, and also the guy that they're looking for. Mm-hmm. He's on the drums. And you got Jim Jesuit, who's a guitarist and the soulful, bordering on haunting lyricist and vocalist. And I should say vocalist. And Robert Richmond III, apparently, who has got his collar popped and he's wearing an Izod, like I would have been if I were in a band.
It's a big name to live up to.
At this moment right
here. Robert.
So, well, thank you guys all for being here. We appreciate it. And you are you're the first ever live music performance out of the WGN Studio B, where it's going to be Live Music Fridays for the rest of time. How about that?
Yeah.
How you liking the studio over there?
It's gorgeous.
So cool.
State of the art. It's got a beautiful view. Couldn't be happier.
Yeah. I'm telling you, this thing's going to end up on the, you know, it's good. They're going to make a movie about this studio before it's all said and done. I hope there are people recording what you're doing.
Should we start having rock bands sign the wall before they leave?
Oh, there's that. Wait till you tell that to the engineers.
Yeah, they're going
to
love that.
Yeah.
Oh, Johnny Depp play me.
Yeah. don't tempt me. All right. Let us talk about, first of all, if you want to see these guys, they're going to be at the Outpost in Lockport. And you're relatively newly formed, but the music you've already put out has gotten so much attention that you're already getting media requests and record requests and stuff like that. So congratulations on this. This is amazing stuff.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been coming together, I think, more quickly than we could have even anticipated.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
It's just been fantastic.
Yep. So, all right. So, if you were to describe yourself, I don't want to describe you. You describe yourself. Where do you fall here? Where are the people that are inspiring you?
This is always an interesting question because, I mean, for me, it's guys like Billy Joel, Frank Zappa, David Bowie, Tom Waits.
The one genre right there. Don't worry about it.
Well, that's the beauty of it, too, is that we're all pulling from so many different genres, and that's what, you know, I might be doing a vocal line from a blues song, and Robert's playing a bass line from like a doom
Campbell
metal
or something like that.
And then Jameson's over there rocking out like Billy Joel,
doing whatever.
Yeah. Jameson is like, he basically that Muppet drummer is what you see going on there.
Animal, yeah.
It's like this. Yeah, it's just, it's animal. He's just, it's as muscular as you're gonna hope to find it. So, all right, what do you guys want to play first?
We're gonna play,
I believe, Streetlight.
Streetlight.
All right, take it away.
Turn off, baby. You know I've got to go. Makes me feel like a child. Never been so low. I don't know what we were talking about. I never know. Now we're sinking. Turn off, baby. And the sky turns to red. And I'll be waiting for you. And everything you said, I don't know what you were dreaming about. I never know. I was thinking.
That's timeless. Cool. That is timeless. I've ever heard timeless before. Mm. All right, that is called Streetlight. That's Where's Jameson. You can see them Friday, a week from today, at the Outpost in Lockport. We'll be back with more Live Music Friday with Where's Jameson, live from Studio G, the live music studio here at WGN, coming up. But first, Judy, what's going? Actually, I don't know. I can't see my newsroom right now. We have no news person. I hate to ask Violetta what's going to happen on the news, because God knows.
I can tell you what's happening in traffic.
Okay, go ahead. We got a band here that you're not going to believe. Where's Jameson? And they are, it's three guys.
Yeah, three guys, Southwest Suburban Lockport.
Are you guys all from South from Lockport? All three of you?
Roundabout
for the most part.
Just about around there. All right.
It sounds like they're in the witness protection program.
Who's asking?
No, we're from.
Why do you want to know?
Yeah, they're all looking at each other. Yeah, we're from Lockport. Yeah, that's where we're from.
Some identification before you leave the studio.
All right, this is Jameson Edwards, Jim Jesuit, and Robert Richmond III. And what do you want to do next?
We'll be playing our first single, which is called Stand By Yourself.
Take it away.
We have no fear as the morning comes, 'cause we think we know. But we are young and we're moving on.
There you have it. Where's Jameson? We found him.
Wow.
And they're right in there. Yeah. And they're all very mysterious about where they're from.
They really are. I find that
very interesting. Well, one more song from Where's Jameson for Live Music Fridays. But first, all right, Where's Jameson is in the studio. Time for one last one. And you can find Where's Jameson at wheresjameson.bandcamp on Facebook. Where's Jameson? Just put Where's Jameson into the Google, and it will help you find Jameson. The Outpost is where they're going to be in Lockport a week from tonight. Boys, take it away.
There we go. If we all stood up on the shoulders of giants, how can you say you know better? Cause if we all stood up on the shoulders of giants, how can you say you know?
Where's Jameson?
Wow.
Right there. You can see them on a week from tonight, July 27th, at the Outpost in Lockport. And it's some amazing musicianship, but some
really
great
are.
Songwriting right there. So Jameson Edwards, Jim Jesuit, and Robert Richmond III.
Makes you want to chill out and have a beer and enjoy your Friday night.
Yeah, well, or I think you'll be seeing them at some big things.
I think so, too.
Before this is all said and done. Already getting all kinds of great
yeah.
press. So that's where that is. All right, Patty Vasquez is stepping into the studio.
There she is.
And Patty is, well, I would just like to point out that Patty seems to have just rushed in from the Cubs game, and I'm sorry for you.
How can you
sorry
tell,
for your
Ro?
Loss.
No, I just said
head
to my,
toe
am
Cubs gear.
Am I screaming Cubby
did,
fan?
Did they call the slaughter rule?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I saw the score at one point today.
I pitched for two innings.
It looked pretty.
And you did well.
Yeah.
I thought
it was, yeah, I got there. Actually, when I got there, it was 11. It was 5-1 when I got there.
Oh.
And the game hadn't started yet. No, it was, I got there a little bit late, which is probably for the best.
It probably was yeah. in a situation like this.
I mean, they still had 11 more runs to score.
Oh, yeah. Oh, brutal.
Yeah, so there you go.
And they literally were pulling people out of their field yeah. position players to pitch.
I thought it was going to be my turn. I didn't know what was going to happen.
And this is not like a World Series championship kind of team move. You don't see that on a lot of those, lots of teams that do that have that, you know, the big move.
Right. No, it's just fun at that point.
Yeah.
Just,
I suppose.
Yeah.
I suppose. It's one way of looking at it.
Yeah, I don't know. I got a lot of control. We've got Dave Lundy coming in, Scott Stantis. We'll talk about some of the big stories of the week. And Adam Selzer, who's one of the best architectural tour guides in Chicago.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, he does. He's great with like the history of places. He also does like haunted tours.
He's doing the river one, right?
Yes, he's doing the river one. He also does a lot of the like graveyards in Chicago.
Those are super cool, those tours.
They are, even all of them.
He's one of the best. He does so much great research.
If people have not been to Graceland, not the one in Memphis, the Graceland Cemetery here.
Agreed.
It is so beautiful, and it's got so much history
yes.
in it. Everybody who was anybody in this town's buried there.
That Laredo Taft sculpture, you know, with the guy and you can see, you know, his eyes beating out. It looks like the Grim Reaper. That's a great statue.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely a worthwhile.
Yeah.
You know, you got to be in the mood for a cemetery.
Yeah.
And not know anybody in it. And that's a rare moment that you feel like that. But if you
I love cemeteries.
I do too. There
I go
is
for
so
walks
much history.
Yeah.
You were those people. I see those people walking in the cemetery and I'm like, doesn't it creep you out?
Oh, Roseland's beautiful.
Roseland, another one.
And it's quiet for sure. But
when I go to other cities, I go to their cemeteries.
Oh,
anyway,
you?
I do.
Patty,
I don't know what to tell you.
I'm always looking for inheritance in cemeteries. Is what I'm doing.
I might know them.
Yeah,
the weirdest one is Alphonsus on Milwaukee Avenue because right in the middle of it is a retirement home for Catholic priests and nuns.
So like they look out.
Always wondered about those people who live on the Evanston Chicago border on the lakefront.
Yes.
There's that cemetery, and there are these. They built those buildings that look right into it,
yes.
and you're like.
Right.
How much are they charging for that?
Can we get a twofer?
What a view. Yeah.
A BOGO. Yeah.
So we'll talk a lot about Chicago Street and cemeteries and architecture. So that's coming up. You guys have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.